Thank you. Do you know, sorry, I've got to say this. Sarah and I just looked at each other in amazement because we're recording this, and then we had this lovely kind of voice that said "recording in process," and we just looked at each other and went, "Wow, that's really kind of snazzy. That's a new thing that Zoom have brought in."
Yeah, where did that come from?
I don't know. We just looked at each other and went, "Well, that's not you, is it, talking?"
Recording in process.
Yes, lovely. So, thank you for joining us. Welcome to our podcast today. For those of you that haven't seen our posts over the last couple of weeks, Sarah and I started to have a chat about language. And I was saying that I really wanted to do something around the changes in the language that we use, particularly around disabled people and vulnerability, because there have been some stuff that had come out on LinkedIn to remind us about some of the words that we should be using. But actually, then we went off into a whole conversation about our experiences and our views on that. And I think, not to give too much away, but what we aim to do today in this podcast is to talk about it in the context of your customers and not in any way sort of denigrating the experience that they're going through, because you want to use the right language. I suppose that's kind of what we're looking at, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And we were talking about this, what do we call it? It's toxic positivity.
Yeah, it's that thing where we're trying to not tread on any landmines, emotional landmines.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying not to, I guess, trigger the client into having customer into having a reaction, because we don't think we can cope with it. Mm-hmm. And so we go, "Oh yeah, everything's okay, it's fine." And so it ends up almost negating their experiences.
Yeah, and this sort of came up with, so it's been out for a while now, but I think it's, I don't know if it's DWP or it's .gov.uk. It's probably the latter, actually, but they brought out a guidance document. I mean, really helpful guidance document around how language has evolved around disabled people. So, for example, as a community, the conversation we used to have was to talk about people with disabilities, but actually the majority, not everyone, just to point that out, prefers the term disabled people, because it's based on the social model of disability, where it's not what you have going on with you that makes you disabled, it's the environment around you that disables you. So that was the kind of thought process behind the language change. And they also give some, good, helpful guidance around some of the things that we should avoid saying. And I suppose this is a bit that we wanted to pick up today in the podcast, was around things like avoiding saying suffers from, battling with those sorts of things. It's the kind of language that we still see in the media. Any celebrity dies, in front page news is Lucy's battle with, fought bravely against, all those sorts of things. So it is really emotive. And can I just say, for everyone listening, this is not me or Sarah kind of imposing our own view on it. It's I think for us to really just all be very aware of language and being a bit balanced about it, I suppose, so that we don't end up causing friction when we shouldn't do. So this guidance was really good that came out. It's like some really sensible things around, rather than talking about suffers from, talk about living with or having. I'm just about to sneeze, but I don't want to do that in a podcast because it'll blow your eardrums out. So I'm trying to stop myself from sneezing. that's a very sort of factual language to use to describe what it is that's going on with somebody. So it's remove the emotion. And I understand that the reason behind it was to, stop people from being labelled as disempowered. So this whole thing around, suffers with, it's in danger of everyone going, "Oh, poor you," which is kind of where it came from, which is say, yeah, you can live with dementia and you can live with cancer.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's my problem with it a little bit, if I'm honest, is the desire to empower people and the care that we need to take, not to take away from people actually what they are going through as a result of a situation that's happening in their lives. Because if they feel it, who am I to correct them? If someone says to me, I'm really suffering with my mental health, am I going to go, actually, I think you're fine, you shouldn't say that. You should say, I'm living with instead. That's the bit that feels really uncomfortable to me.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. I mean, I think it's kind of keying into the language that your customer's using, isn't it? Rather than going wholesale, this is going to be our tone. We're not going to use suffering. We're going to have living with. And I guess there's, I completely see why it's being done, but I just feel a bit uncomfortable with it all. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, it's like you say, it's negating their experience, but there's also something about, I guess for me, it just feels a bit chilly.
Yeah.
You know, there's no... Yeah. So when you say struggle, I understand it can be a bit disempowering. People go, well, no, actually, I'm not struggling with cancer. I just have cancer or whatever. But for me, if I was to turn around in a conversation and say to a customer, oh, you're living with cancer, I can just imagine if you get them on a bad day, you've got no bloody idea what I'm living with. Do you know what I mean?
It just,
the whole thing, I think, is fraught with misuse.
Yeah, yes, it is. If you don't understand, if you don't understand where your customer is in relation to their own acceptance of what's going on, I suspect you could really get yourself into a bit of hot water. I have to say, I think from the perspective of the language that we might use generally in the public, it can be helpful to take away the emotional side of it and be quite factual so that people can find information out and it's not overlaid with lots of emotion, because people feel lots of different emotions. I think it works from that perspective. But the cancer ones are really, like, I had so many kind of examples that I wanted to sort of share, and I suppose cancer is like the obvious one for me, I suppose, insofar as, right, so I've lost 3 friends in the last 18 months to cancer. So all of a similar age, all around my age, and their process of living with it was very different for each of them. And one of my friends did battle it. I mean, she fought it. I mean, she hated it.
Yeah.
And she used all of her energy to try and, I don't know, overcome it, beat it, whatever you want to call it. You know, she considered it to be a combat, and that's how she dealt with it. I'm never going to take that away from her, because that was her process of dealing with it.
Yeah.
Another friend was completely kind of, it's, you know, it's not fine, but I'm fine with it, and I'm okay, and I can function, and I can, you know, put my faith in the medical profession to do right by me. Completely different thing. For me, and this is, you know, like, for those of you that have followed us for a few years now, you know that, oh, 5 years, almost 5 years ago, so I'm almost in remission. So 5 years ago, I was told that I had a rare form of skin cancer. I went to work. Was I living with it? I absolutely was not. I felt suffocated by it and possessed by it, and I could not wait to get rid of it. And I didn't live with it. It lived with me as an unwelcome guest. And I existed. So if anyone wanted to come up to me and say, oh, yeah, you know, you're like, you've lived with cancer, I really didn't. I just day by day existed until such time that someone who's a lot brainier than me and knows what they're doing managed to get rid of it for me. I didn't battle it.
Yeah.
I didn't have any of those things. I didn't beat it. Somebody else did that for me. I was just the carrier of it, really, until such time somebody did something about it. So my reaction is quite strong, if you see what I mean. And did I suffer? Yeah, I did, mentally because of it, physically because of it. But I don't ever want that to be kind of removed from history for anyone that's gone through something like that, because the terminology of the words that we use has changed. Does that make sense? It's a real thing, isn't it? And when people talk about mental health, and if they're struggling with it, then then a lot of people will still, when they explain to you how they feel, they will still talk about, I'm suffering from. And I always think, you know, that for those of us, we might start to sort of argue about the semantics of, do you say suffering, suffering from, suffering with? I've sort of made my peace with that by saying that I think about people who are suffering because of it.
Yeah.
That's my kind of like one degree of separation from it. What I definitely don't, I don't like is the kind of like the post review of everything that's happened. And then that's when people start talking about losing battles with or bravely, you know, bravely fighting and stuff like that. I think that's unhelpful. And I wish they would stop saying that in the media and everywhere else.
Yeah.
But some people in their journey, whatever that is, do fight it and are brave. So how do we continue to use those words and recognise that with our customers or each other, actually, without kind of sugarcoating it too much, so the actual impact of what's happened to somebody gets lost? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, it is a personal thing, isn't it? It's kind of very much shaped by our own personal perceptions of life, the cards we've been dealt, and the circumstances that sit around it. So, you know, as you say, your friend fought it, she battled hard, but for you it very much felt different. The way you described it, it was almost, this is going to sound awful, but it sounded almost like it was something you were carrying around with you.
Oh yeah,
without wanting it.
Yeah, it was I always say it's quite it's not ironic, it's the most misused word ever apart from literally, but it was in my back. So it was like carrying a monkey on your back. It's just that the monkey happened to be cancer. And if I could have got a spoon, I would have dug it out myself. That's what I say to people. If I could have done it, then I would have done. I would have just wanted to get shot of it. And maybe that's because of the type of one that it was, because the medical profession is absolutely amazing, aren't they? They're telling you stuff that you shouldn't really hear as an individual. And they described it as having tentacles that were sort of spreading itself out. So if you can imagine, it's just, I thought like alien was going to like pop out on my back or something like that. So it's not always helpful, is it, for the person who's living with it? I've got an octopus in my back. That's what I kept thinking. I've got like an octopus.
Why would you describe it that way? I mean, for goodness sake, I would have had a shit fit going, oh, great. So this is spreading its tentacles around me. Yeah. I would have felt really, worse.
Yeah. That's what I mean by like feeling like consumed and kind of like suffocated by it. You just had a sense of something just like enveloping you, all of you, until they could kind of get shot of it. And so this is what I mean about when I came back to thinking about, yes, language has evolved. Yes, we want to make sure that we don't use the wrong words to talk about situations that people are in, but at the same time, we don't want to completely lose what's happened to them and how they felt and the impact it had on them. Otherwise, we're in danger of, I don't know, like homogenizing everything, which it almost makes it feel a little bit, I don't know. I suppose it's the same thing with, you know, people that are living with dementia and Alzheimer's. So you can see that I'm checking myself. I'm making sure that I use the language.
Yeah.
But again, so when I think back to a family member that had it, they suffered because of it, physically, mentally, everything.
Yeah.
The family suffered because of it. I would still want that to be recognised by the person that I was talking to. If I was trying to sort out that person's affairs or just trying to get their accounts in order, it's that whole thing about, sort of the homogenization of language to try and be factual, but at the same time not lose the emotional, physical, gut-wrenching response that people can have to difficult situations in their lives, and for us not to wipe it away on the basis of worrying that we're using the wrong word.
I think it's very individual. So I had a family member who also had dementia, and like you, it every single facet of their life was affected. You know, excuse me, it was Dewey bodies. which meant that it was my granddad. So basically my granddad would, he'd go off on these flights of fancy and then he'd have quite terrifying moments of lucidity.
Yes.
And we were sat with the in the hospital with him one time, and he was in this area where it was sort of locked in, and he had a moment of lucidity as we all sat there, and it was kind of like, I remember him sort of saying, right, I'm done, I can't do this anymore. And the whole family went, no, you're fine, no, it's fine. And I'm sitting there going, this is not fine. This really is not fine. And it's kind of like that, isn't it, when we use that positive toxic language to kind of sort of rub away someone's experience and go, no, you're living with, when actually what they're emoting down the phone at you, going, actually I'm really struggling, you know, this has affected my life, I can't pay my bills, and you go, oh well, you're living with cancer. It's not matching that customer, is it?
So no,
you know, you're, it's not even toxic positivity, is it? It's trying to remove their emotive response to something that they're living with that you're not having to.
Yeah,
I guess it's being very attuned to how they're expressing it and then mirroring that back without, as you say, dragging it down into the depths of potential despair, because they're already living with that.
Yeah, and I do think you have to take a cue from what the other person is saying and how they're feeling and how they're describing it. And yes, it may not be how we're supposed to talk about stuff anymore, but that's not their truth.
No.
So, you know, for some people to say, I have cancer, is just too big a thing to actually say, because it does sound so factual and so, not final, but, you know, it just, it's so factual, it's kind of cold. I think that's what I'm trying to get at, like, going back to your point. It just like, ouch, that's... If I heard someone say that back to me, I'd be like, oh my God, yeah, thanks for that. That's just completely like freaked me out.
Well, that's the other thing as well, reflecting something like that back at a person. You know, I do it in the counselling sessions, and sometimes they'll say, bleh, and you reflect it back and they go, oh my God, that's enormous. Because it's come out of their mouth, they kind of lived with it, and then you reflect it back and they go, oh. So it's not a question of them sort of phoning up and going, right, I've got cancer. You've got to be alive to the fact that that may change through the conversation. So your business can't go, we're going to talk about it in this way, because that's too constrictive. And you're going to probably end up with complaints because you're potentially triggering people or just not moving with them. And so they're like, well, that's a bit chilly. I don't feel like you've really taken me seriously.
Yeah. As I say, I think for me, that's the biggest, you know, When we're talking, we always try and think about things in the context of, you know, complaints and, you know, customer service and stuff. And it was just such an interesting but also fraught with danger topic. another one that we've decided to cover. Just keep throwing the grenades in and see what happens. But I think it's a real conversation to have, that we all need to have, because as businesses, we need to think about how we say things from a standing start, as in what do we say on our websites about, you know, supporting people with certain conditions, what words do we use to describe that. And yes, we probably do need to refer back to the gov.uk way of saying stuff from a very sort of factual, impassive perspective, I suppose. Objective, maybe objective is a better word. But then for everyone to have the skills to know that as human beings we are not perfect, and so we will talk about things in the way that we're feeling about it, and so we have to learn then to modify how we talk to people and talk about the situation that's going on with them that reflects their language and reflects how they feel. And I think, and it goes back to this thing about so what, I suppose, is the question. is my worry a bit is, it goes back to this homogenisation thing again, is that, you know, if you're looking at the impact of something that's gone wrong for somebody, if we use too many of these objective words around a situation, then we may not be thinking of the right outcome for that customer.
Yeah.
Possibly. Because we haven't really understood the impact of it, because we've dulled down the emotional response that people can have.
Yeah, in a roundabout way, we've come back to sort of, you know, putting the customer at the heart of everything, isn't it? Rather than saying, we're going to have a process that fits for us, which means that we dull and we make everything okay.
Mm.
We sort of smudge over all this stuff. But rather, you should be putting the consumer at the heart of everything. And if they are saying, one day I'm struggling with, or another day I've got, then it's being alive to that language in the moment, isn't it? And I suppose equipping your staff and trusting them to be able to move with those people and not just go, I'm struggling with, you've got, completely different.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's quite a big, I think particularly at the moment, when so many people are going through so many different things in their lives, COVID and not COVID related, that, you know, we always talk about this thing about this need to have a connection with somebody. And when we talk about empathy, and you posted about empathy the other day, which set off a whole kind of like a ream of comments and stuff from people about the danger of misunderstanding what empathy is and what it feels and it looks like. That's where we need to be really careful, because if we're so hot on being empathetic and so feeling it and showing it, then that's in the words that we use. And as I say, for anyone that's listening that thinks, what are you saying then, that we ignore all of the kind of the advice? No, absolutely not. There's absolutely a million and one good reasons as to why we need to reframe the language when we talk about someone when they've died and they've lived with a condition. Totally. Yeah. That should stop. But, you know, when people have something or living with something and it is making them suffer in whatever way, then we need to recognize that.
Yeah.
Use the right terminology to describe the condition that they're living with, I think it's a big point. But not lose the impact that it's had on them. Otherwise, we could be in danger of not really seeing how bad it is for somebody and what support they need. And if something's gone wrong, how bad that is for them in the context of what else is going on.
Exactly. It's all in that recognition, isn't it? I think, you know, yes, there's, as you say, I guess, again, the SEO is saying it's not ticking boxes. So it is, if you're going to put the consumer at the heart of everything, then it is going to come down to things like language, empathy, recognition of, you know, the customer being in the middle. Client, I've really got to knock that on the head. It's the blooming counselling world smacking into the side of complaints handling, consumer, client. So it is, you know, if we are going to be doing this, looking at our processes, redesigning them, making sure they're fit for purpose all the way through, then it is going to come down to what could seem like splitting hairs, but actually is critical in engaging with somebody else in your process.
Yeah, totally agree. And it's I think it's quite a fledgling area. When I talk about it, a lot of people don't realise the sensitivity, quite rightly, some of the sensitivity around particularly describing medical conditions that people have, and making sure that you use the right terminology, because things have definitely moved on since when I was a kid and what we used to refer to certain conditions as. And it's important that everybody knows what they are, because they can be offensive if you get it wrong. Yes. Absolutely. But the rest of it, I think we need to take the lead of the person and how they tell us that they're feeling, because that's a window into their world that we might otherwise not see.
Yeah, exactly.
And find it very difficult to respond to. So what a topic for a conversation, eh?
Flippy, right. We've put the world to rights, I think, on language.
We have. So what I'd recommend to everyone, if you've not done it before, is check out, I'm sure we can put a link in when we do it, but check out the gov.uk website, where it's got some very helpful pointers about some of the ways to talk about disability in particular and certain conditions and what the appropriate way to refer to them is. That's eminently helpful. Be careful about using this kind of media they lost their battle with, they fought bravely. So many people, actually so many people who have had relatives die in, and I can't think of a name now, but we've had a couple of people that have died recently, sort of celebrities, and their partners said, please don't talk about them battling with, or, you know, losing their battle with on stuff, because that's just not how it works. And that's absolutely true. But be mindful of people and the language they use when they are in the middle of a shitstorm.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be worried about whether they use the right term. And I use the right in inverted commas, the right terminology or not.
Yeah.
Because it's how they feel.
Exactly. So, yeah. So I hope that was useful and interesting. And we'll be back. Well, I don't think we've decided what the next one yet is, have we?
Answers on a postcard. If there's anything else you want us to tackle.
Yeah. Or you'd like to come on and talk to us about something you're interested in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we would love to have some guests on here. We'll be putting it out there, but if you drop us an email, hello@cwsltraining.com, we'd love to meet you and get to know your points of view on things. So, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bye.